From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is the 9 o'clock hour. It's the final hour of this seven. I've seen hours too many times. I apologize for that. It is the final section of our 7 hour Jake marathon here on Cairo Radio. We've had a ton of fun, and so I'm excited that we get to do this final hour. Buckle up. It's going to be fun. Let's start off with some really cool news, some really great news. I played a little bit of this audio earlier, but I'm so fascinated by this. I think it's so cool. I like aspirational, technological accomplishments and things in the news. And this certainly qualifies. Neuralink, which is a company that was co-founded by billionaire Elon Musk, who I also like, they released a video just yesterday, a live stream actually, of one of their engineers sitting beside this 29-year-old guy. His name is Nolan Arbaugh. He's in a, looks to be like a wheelchair situation. He is a quadriplegic. He lost his ability to move any of his, arms or legs in a freak diving accident. I'm going to let Nolan introduce himself. He can tell you a little bit about himself, and then I'll tell you what amazing thing they have now done with Neuralink.
My name's Nolan Arbaugh. I'm 29 years old. About 8 years ago, I was in kind of a freak diving accident and dislocated my C4, C5. So I'm a complete quadriplegic. So I'm paralyzed from below the shoulders. I have no sensation or movement below my level of injury, so below my shoulders.
All right, so you hear that. He has no sensation of feeling or movement below his shoulders. So why is he in the news? What amazing thing has Neuralink done? They have implanted a computer chip, a brain chip into his brain, and it is allowing him, as we're watching this video, it allows him to play on the computer. His brain is talking directly to the computer. It's totally bizarre to watch and so cool. He's literally sitting there, and as you're sitting there and as he's talking to us, you see the cursor on the computer moving up and down, moving chess pieces. You'll hear what that sounds like here. The Neuralink engineer actually asked him, he goes, "Hey, can you also turn that music down? Because we can't hear it over the audio here." What an amazing accomplishment.
Do you want to explain a little bit what's going on here?
Yeah, so I love playing chess, and so this is one of the things that y'all have enabled me to do, something that I wasn't able to really do much the last few years, especially not like this. I had to use like a mouse stick and stuff, but now it's all being done with my brain. If y'all can see the cursor moving around the screen, that's all me, y'all. It's pretty cool, huh?
Actually, can you pause the song just for the audio coming through? And that was also done with your brain?
Yep. It's all brain power up there.
It sounds like he's a fan of Jamiroquai, if I'm picking up that song correctly. So he describes what it's like using this, and his description is really great.
So we started out with trying out a few different things. We basically went from what we call kind of differentiating, like imagined movement versus attempted movement. So a lot of what we started out with was attempting to move. So I would attempt to move my right hand, left, right, forward, back. And from there, I think it just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted it to, which was such a wild experience.
How amazing is that? Elon Musk commented on the video. Clearly, I mean, he's aware of this, but he commented on the video and he said, the way that this works, I'm just kind of paraphrasing what he was saying, but he said the way that this is going to work in the future, not right now, but hopefully sometime in the future, maybe even near future, I don't know, they're going to be able to use this brain chip to send messages just like it's doing right now. The brain chip is helping connect his brain. So these are things that he wants it to do to connect to the computer. And it is then moving the cursor and the mouse and all these different things. Not the mouse, but he's moving the cursor on the computer screen, turning off the music, so he can play chess, do things like that. In the future, Elon says, they will be able to use that same technology to send electrical signals to the limbs, which are no longer, however it works that somebody becomes paralyzed. they're going to be able to use these this brain chip to send messages down to the arms and the legs so that they will be able to just work as if they are still connected in all the spots that they need to be. So people will be able to just seamlessly be living their lives. Even though, so you could have somebody who's a quadriplegic walking around, using their arms, using their legs, running, playing with their kids, all these things because of this amazing technology. How cool is that? And there's a lot of people who are really critical of Elon Musk. They don't like some of the things that he says, or they don't like some of the things he believes. Whatever. Like, toss that stuff aside. That's a lot of that's just people don't like his politics. And that's your right to not like his politics. But when you look at the other stuff that he's investing in and that he's doing, pretty cool. I mean, this guy's sending rocket ships to the moon. He's going to outer space. He's got this company that is helping quadriplegics maybe someday be able to walk again. I mean, those are like miraculously cool things. I really like that kind of stuff. So I applaud his efforts and I wish them Godspeed. All right. This is another interesting story. I want to talk about this with you guys. And I'm not sure what I'm not sure how we should feel about this. And I'm wondering, the timing of this seems interesting to me, but let's get into it first. Oprah has a new special on ABC and it's called An Oprah Special: Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution. So it's no secret that Oprah has talked about, I mean, she's a big part of her career is the fact that she talks about weight loss, her weight loss journey. Let's see here. There's an article out talking about this new special, and it says, I'll just paraphrase it here. Basically, Oprah is teaming up with, or is at least doing this special on this thing that she has discovered that helps her. So she's been talking for years and years about her weight loss journey, and she has gone up and down in weight, and she has kind of like helped a lot of people in their struggle with eating and weight loss and all these different things. In fact, until I think February, she was a 10% stakeholder in the company Weight Watchers. She owned 10% of that company, which she just sold because it would be a conflict of interest now. She is now saying that no longer is she's going to be using Weight Watchers because now she uses these, or she talks about using these drugs. Here's a little clip from this new special that Oprah's got out, and that you can check it out on ABC or on Hulu.
I love bread.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's an old ad from Weight Watchers. We'll get to that in a second. Here's a trailer for the Hulu special.
Obesity is a complex disease.
They are the new drugs sparking the weight loss revolution.
All of a sudden, I felt like I was freed.
But there's confusion and controversy. Are the medications safe?
Should children take them?
She would be 500 pounds by 16.
So I'm having a conversation with lead experts to answer our questions.
These medications are really a game changer.
Let's stop the shaming and blaming. An Oprah special. Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution. Monday on ABC and stream on Hulu.
It's not the first time she's talked about this. Yeah, I mean, this is a new special because it's like everybody's talking about this now. But she actually talked about Ozempic and similar weight loss drugs on her show recently.
Oh, you all have been seeing the headlines, the new weight loss drugs. Everybody's talking about Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro. Are these new drugs a miracle cure? Are they safe? That's what we all want to know. I don't know if there is another public person whose weight struggle has been exploited as much as mine over the years.
So this is amazing to kind of understand that my obesity is also a brain issue.
Well, that means the conversation was worth it.
Yes! I am so excited that we finally have effective treatments for obesity.
For almost 50 years, I've been told it's my fault.
I know.
The stigma isn't gonna go away overnight.
As a person who's been shamed for so many years, I'm just sick of it.
Me too.
I'm just sick of it. And I hope this conversation begins the unshaming of it.
She's sick of the shaming, she says. She says, I have to say that I look on the shame that the world gave to me. For 25 years, making fun of my weight was a national sport. To be fair, I mean, that's her quote there a second ago. To be fair, this was a huge part of her public persona, was her talking about her weight loss. I think at one point she even pulled a wagon out from behind the stage with 67 pounds of, I think it was animal fat, to give an example to the audience of the weight that she had lost using some liquid diet or something. But listen to this. She says, all these years, I thought of all the people who never had to diet, were just using their willpower and that they were for some reason stronger than me. This is Oprah talking. But now I realize y'all weren't even thinking about the food. It's not that you had the willpower. You weren't even thinking about it. You weren't obsessing about it. And I don't know. Do you guys think that this adoption, I feel like we're adopting these weight loss drugs very quickly. And they are not approved by the FDA. And for weight loss. I think the drugs originally were designed for, let's see here. I have some info about these drugs, actually. There are also reports of unpleasant side effects from taking the medications, including a potential risk of thyroid tumors and cancer associated with Ozempic, according to the studies done with rodents with these drugs. More common side effects include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain, constipation, while more severe side effects of Ozempic and other similar drugs include gastroparesis, allergic reactions, changes in vision, and pancreatitis. Some doctors may prescribe Ozempic to help individuals with diabetes lose weight, but this is a use considered, quote, off-label, because the drug is not FDA approved for weight management, but now everybody's using it. Now, apparently this drug is also very expensive. And so the average person out there, because it's likely not going to be covered by your insurance, unless you might have diabetes or something like that. And if you don't have diabetes, a lot of people are finding that this is not being covered under their insurance policies, which then leaves them with the only option is to pay out of pocket. And if it's so expensive, I mean, somebody like Oprah, obviously she's not worried about the cost. She's got a lot of money. It's not a problem for her. But for the average person out there, it's a big investment. And then further, the question is, how long do you have to take these? Is it one of those deals where, like, you know, is it kind of like people treat a cleanse, right? So like you might change your diet drastically for a short amount of time until you get back to a weight that you're happy with. And then you just do the thing that people talk about, like maintaining your weight. Apparently, according to the things that I have read, that's not how these work. They were saying that, like, once you're on these, the only way to stay thin and to keep the weight off is to keep taking these drugs. So you become kind of just like a permanent patient of these, I guess not patient, but a permanent user of these weight loss drugs, which I'm sure the big pharma industry loves. Listen to this, though. This is really interesting also. This is just an interesting side of it. Oprah has done many, many different things, and they tend to turn into advertisements. Like when she was using Weight Watchers and she was using her weight loss journey as a part of the story with Weight Watchers, she was talking about how much she just loves bread. And at the time, she was saying that using the Weight Watchers routine and using their portion control, she's able to eat bread, which she couldn't do before.
I love bread.
This is kind of a well-known Oprah Weight Watchers ad, I guess. I was not aware of it until I was doing a little bit of research into this, but I guess this really made a splash. Oprah's talking about loving bread so much.
I love bread. I love bread.
I now just manage it, so I don't deny myself bread. I have bread every day. I have bread every day. That's the genius of this program. I lost 26 pounds, and I have eaten bread every single day.
Well, that was a Weight Watchers ad. That's back when she was on Weight Watchers, and I'm guessing that didn't work for her long term because she switched over to using one of these drugs, I guess. According to all these reports, she's using one of these. I don't know if they've said yet which one specifically, but no longer at Weight Watchers. She left Weight Watchers. She sold her socks. She resigned or stepped down from the board, whatever you do when you leave a company like that. And my question is, like, are these healthy drugs to take? And then I further wonder, is America kind of perfectly, or the world, I guess, are they perfectly teed up to take a drug like this? Because in the past few years, with all the different vaccine talk that we've had, people have gotten a lot more comfortable. Like, I see vaccine commercials all the time. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just find this fascinating. I see ads all of the time for Pfizer and Moderna and all the different COVID vaccine providers. I see them on every single thing that I watch. I see them on online all the time. They are a massive market. There's massive marketing campaigns behind these. And I'm just wondering, like, is this a marketing campaign? This Ozempic thing, or Wegovy, or however you pronounce it. It's not Wagyu, right? It's not the beef. Wegovy, or whatever these other ones are. Is it just a massive marketing campaign because they're going to make so much money on these? If they're telling everybody this is a miracle, this is a weight loss drug, it's the only way that you can do it. The marketing now is you cannot do it without these drugs because they're discovering, according to what they're saying, according to what Oprah and these doctors that she's talking to are saying, it's a disease. It's not something that you control on your own. It's a disease. Listen to this. This is interesting. Julian Michaels, she was on that show, The Biggest Loser, which the title makes it sound like a mean show, but it's not. They like help people lose weight through hard work, through diet. You know, they change their diets. They force them to work out like really, really hard. And then hopefully they teach them how to live life in a different way. And they show tremendous results. That's why the show was on the air for a long time. Julia Michaels was talking to Fox News about Ozempic, and she thinks people are adopting this too quickly and the side effects are scary and they should be a little more wary of it.
Here's the problem with this, right? Is that you can never get off these drugs. If you do get off of them, all of the meta-analysis show us that you will gain all the weight back and then some, two-thirds of it within the first year. But now you've messed up your metabolism, you've lost muscle, you might be running the risk of all these side effects. So you're gonna gain it back and then some and have lingering side effects. On top of that, let's say you're like, no, I'm staying on it forever. Really? Google Ozempic plateau. You will plateau on Ozempic. It will stop working. Right around the 18-month to two-year mark, it's going to stop working. Now what are you going to do? Because now you're literally beholden to it. It's expensive. Insurance isn't going to cover it forever. Are you going to be on it forever? So we don't even know what this looks like 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road.
But she says, listen, this has sparked a new conversation about weight and what is a healthy weight, and maybe this is a good thing overall. Even if the drug isn't good, maybe the conversation about weight is a good thing.
The two good things that have come out of this, in my opinion, are it has proven what I've been saying for three decades, calories in, calories out is weight loss. Health is a different conversation, but it facilitates weight loss. Proof, inputting. Second thing, we know that women and men of all ages can lose weight because most of these people on Ozempic are 40 plus, right? And they're shrinking. So looks like you can still lose weight if you're eating less food. And the third thing, I guess the third thing is now we're allowed to say that obesity is deadly again because the pharmaceutical companies have shaped that narrative one more time. So those are the only good things about it. I'm going to tell you that if you can find a way to eat less food without these drugs, you will lose weight and there'll be nothing but upside. Instead of all the negative side effects, you will have a list of positive side effects from improved cognitive function, improved heart health, improved hormone balance, and on and on and on.
I think it's interesting. I'm going to keep following the story because I do think it's interesting, this kind of intersection of big pharma marketing, whatever Oprah's involvement in this is. I don't know if she has any interest in these companies or not. I don't know that. But I do feel like they don't know enough about the long-term effects of these drugs to be pushing them the way that they are. I guess maybe they just don't care. And I don't know. That would kind of scare me if I was considering this. But they are losing a ton of weight and they look great. So maybe that's a trade-off that people are fine with. Like, you're going to take some risk, but you're going to lose a ton of weight and you're going to feel like you are, you know, just feeling better about how you look. People are free to make that choice, I guess. All right, I got to really quickly play this because we're totally out of time. Russell Wilson released a new video. He's a new Pittsburgh Steeler, and he put out a hype video. People are making fun of it already. Russell just can't do anything on the internet without people making fun. Here's just a 5-second clip of the video.
G-Block, all we know is red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum. G-Block, all we know is red.
So it's like him running around, super nice field somewhere, and he's like just showing people he's still got skills. Well, people on the internet are making fun, and they're pretty funny. This guy, his name is Miles High Greco. He says, that's weird. Usually he runs in circles and takes a sack. Other people are saying this is definitely some Uncle Rico vibes from Napoleon Dynamite.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
Clear over the mountains. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. The third hour is always the best hour. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a very special guest on with me right now. His name is Jason Rance. He's a great friend. We do a double shot video every single day. You guys should check that out on Instagram or X, wherever you get your social media stuff. He hosts the Jason Rance Show on 770 KTTH. He's written a great book called What's Killing America. Is there anything I left out?
Probably.
Yeah, all right.
I'm on Fox.
Jason Rance, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Two nights in a row. That's kind of impressive.
Yes.
I've impressed myself there.
Well, you've impressed me. I wanted to have you on because I am just interested in having this conversation with people. I have three kids. I'm soon to have four kids. My wife is 2 months away from our fourth kid being born. Should be exciting. Four boys I'm going to have. I have been reading a lot lately about this kind of epidemic of loneliness that we have in this country. And I wanted to, you're laughing as you're saying that.
Jason, I wanted you to come in.
Talk about loneliness.
I'm fascinated to talk about loneliness.
No,
please tell us about how you're single.
No. Although I am interested in that. But I do find loneliness fascinating as it relates to the next generation. Because I think loneliness for the next generation is a complete different thing than it is for people like us who were born before technology was shoved into our hands at birth. Which now it kind of is. It's like shoved into your hands at birth. And so, do you have any thoughts on that? Because I read this really great article, maybe just as a primer to get us started off here, a jumping off point. In The Atlantic, this guy, he's an author. His name is Jonathan Haidt. He's working on a book right now about teen mental health. Are you aware of this?
I'm familiar with him.
Yeah. So anyway, he's done this really, really deep dive, and I found it really fascinating. He's done this really, really deep dive into when teen mental health and kind of this loneliness that's happening has really like just completely fallen off the cliff. It has gotten like, I guess that analogy doesn't really work. It's gotten really bad, so you could say falling off the cliff, but it's spiked.
It's just too
which
suicidal
like
ideation.
Something.
Yeah.
Anyway, what he basically says was what he looked at all this data and he went back and he found that for adolescents, basically in the early 2000s, you have this like inflection point where right around the time that cell phones become prominent, which is like 2007 is the first iPhone that comes out, kind of changes the world.
Well, in 2000, that was really starting to be into the world of Facebook, the original version of it. So we were just starting to dip our toes into social media,
but it wasn't accessible in your pocket.
Correct.
Yeah. So social media does kind of like have its birth in the early 2000s. But until then, when you look back at like anxiety levels of youth, it's still pretty stable through the early 2000s, but then right around 2010, it skyrockets. And listen to some of these numbers. Let's see. In between 2010 and 2019, it rose by more anxiety in adolescents, rose by more than 50%. The suicide rate rose by 48% in adolescents between the ages of 10 to 19. And for girls, because social media is far more damaging, it seems, to especially young girls, between the ages of 10 to 14, suicide rates rose by 131% between 2010 and 2019.
I will give a caveat to all of those that
Please.
I think probably is in the book. The percentages don't always equate to as large of a number.
Yeah.
In reality, it's still high.
It's still
of
a
course.
Big number, but
but when
not
you
like-
go from 1 to 9, you say, okay, well, you don't want 9, but that is not a huge number.
It's not 500,000.
Exactly. So not that it's not a problem, and it all makes total sense, right? I mean, some of it you could probably explain that, you know, the stigma attached to anxiety and other potential mental health concerns didn't go away completely, but we started to talk about it more often. And so maybe some people decided to speak up for the first time, but they were feeling it this entire time. We just didn't know it. But I do think that social media in a general sense has created this sense of, I don't even know if I would identify it as anxiety. I think some people do, but it's the whole FOMO. It's the fear of missing out. And you now see everyone, quote unquote, living their best lives.
Yes.
And you're not experiencing that, even though they're not experiencing it. It's all a show that they want you to think that they're experiencing when they're really not. And they're just as lonely as you are. But you're now about impressing invisible people, and you're one of those invisible people that someone else is trying to impress, and it just leads to these feelings of inadequacy within one's own life.
This is really interesting because part of this article talks about that. The University of Chicago actually did this study, and they interviewed, I think it was 1,000 college students that they looked at the University of Chicago, and they said, hey, we want to ask you how much it would cost us to buy your social media account for you from you for a month. So you cannot use it for a month. We will take control of it. Would you just give it to us? How much would it cost you if you wouldn't just give it to us? And most of the students that they spoke to said, well, you'd have to pay me a fair amount of money to get rid of my social media account, because that's how I keep in touch with people, this fear of missing out that you just mentioned. And then they said, all right, well, let me ask you a different question. And they're trying to basically get to they're trying to figure out what's the monetary value of this? Like, how much do you actually value this thing? Then they said, well, what if we told you that of all of your friends, they have given us access already to their social media accounts. We've shut them all down. They cannot use them for 4 weeks. Now we're coming to you and we're saying, now, if none of your friends are using social media for the next 4 weeks, how much would it cost us to keep you from using social media for the next month? And the number is zero. They said generally less than zero, which means that they'd almost pay you to not use social media. Kids, even like teenagers, college students, they have this inherent understanding that this thing is not adding value to their lives. It's not making them happier. Mm-hmm. What they're afraid of is that this is the way that they stay connected socially to people, which is really interesting because, again, when you and I were growing up, which is not super far off from when these kids were growing up because we're so young.
28.
Yeah,
14 years.
Yeah, 20, and me for 12. But for us, we had to figure out how to stay connected to our different communities that we were in. But it wasn't through cell phones. It was like physically, all right, how do I stay in contact with people?
I remember not too long ago, it's probably 8-10 years ago, I was caught up in what everyone was doing on Facebook at the time, which was checking into places and tagging who you're with. So let's say you go to a bar or a restaurant, whatever it is.
Check in at
And totally. I recognized as I was doing it, the reason I was doing it, which is almost like, see, I have a life. And I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just done. And I stopped tagging myself. I'm not on Facebook. And I haven't been for a long time.
Well, you're not a grandmother. That's why.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't usually just give things up that you've become addicted to.
Yeah.
But I remember just making this conscious choice of no longer doing that. And then people started to comment about, what's going on? You're not going anywhere
anymore.
Are
you okay? What happened?
I'm still doing precisely what I was doing before. I'm still seeing the same people that I've been seeing before, but I'm not weirdly bragging about it on social media. And then people are like, oh my God, something's up with you.
The performative nature of it,
it's all a performance. Yeah.
Yes. And you felt like, I'm really tired of feeling like I have to show the world.
Well, just impress people. It's like,
I went to dinner at a restaurant.
Precisely. I don't care if you know that I went to a restaurant with a friend. I don't care if you know that. I mean, I don't need you to know that. I don't get anything of value of you knowing that. It's not building up my lack of self-esteem or whatever it is. So I'm like, I don't need to do it anymore. And that was also because other people were doing it and I was judging them for doing it.
So we're in a unique position. We're in a unique position here. Like, because we grew up without it, but then we grew up at a time where it was kind of directed at us.
Yeah.
And we were the ones who were kind of the experiment.
We were the target.
We were the target, to start with. So we've now had it in our life for like half of our life, basically. And at the same time, we remember a completely different world where it didn't exist at all and nobody even had ever mentioned social media. I didn't even hear the term social media until like sometime after 2003 or 4, probably. Mm-hmm. So now, as we're looking at like this next generation of kids who are growing up in a world where it is everywhere and it's ubiquitous and everybody has it, knowing that it has these harmful effects, how do you figure out, how do you help somebody who's younger figure out how to navigate that weird, tricky world? Advice can I give as a parent to my four kids?
You talk to them about it. And I feel like that's usually the answer that no one goes to because it maybe feels awkward or you're wondering how to have that conversation. But that's 100% the conversation. Just be direct with them.
Yeah.
Say, this device is going to make you seriously lonely if you don't moderate the way that you use it. And then obviously when we're talking about very young kids, like your kids, you're the parent. You're in total charge.
No, I keep them away from it. They're not having it. I told them already, and I've said this on my show many times, but I'm not going to let my kids have a smartphone until they're old enough to get one on their own when they're like 18.
Flip phone until then, and only
dumb
makes
phones.
One call to parents.
Doodlebug.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right move, because it might push them into tech faster than you might think.
They're going to fetishize it.
Well, yeah, because they're going to see other people doing it and they're going to like, oh man, why can't I do it? They're going to desire it more. So I probably wouldn't go that far. However, I do think moderating the amount of use and talking to them from an early age about its impact and how they should be using it, I do think that that actually helps.
Yeah.
But many times, parents don't want to have conversations with their kids. They're texting them all day anyway.
Totally.
And they don't want to have the honest, upfront conversation, because you and I, when we were dealing with social media, this was the greatest part about it. It wasn't used the way that it's currently being used. When we had like MySpace, you were posting emo songs maybe to tell people that you felt a little depressed and you needed a hug, and people then would actually give you that hug. And you're spreading, you know, music and photos, and that was pretty much it.
But you were spreading it to people that you physically had access to in the real world.
These were all real people that you knew, complete strangers. In fact, it would be weird if someone you didn't know reached out to you on like MySpace or Facebook, like, who the hell are you? Why are you talking? Like, that was the weird thing.
Yeah, you'd be turned off by it. And
it's
now
no longer it.
You're thrilled.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, great.
Yeah, this is an interesting person.
More followers
look
today.
At me. Now I have 200 more friends. They don't know you from Jack walking down the street. Like, they'd have no clue who you are. You're just a random dude.
So weird. What a weird. What a weird world we live
in. And it's
now.
Also different for you and I, because we have to be in this space. You choose not really to be all that much in the space, like especially on the Twitter side.
Yeah.
And Instagram, actually everywhere now that I think about
it,
you almost never post.
Yeah. No, we post. I post sometimes.
Yeah, but I have to live in that space for what it is I do, and I hate it, and I recognize how much I hate it, and it's yet I also can't really
it's
stop.
It's a necessary evil category.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I wish it wasn't. I wish I can get, like if I only had to use Instagram, I'd be happy. They know exactly what I like, and I'm able to convince myself not to get jealous of someone else's like video post. All I use Instagram for, adorable dog videos. I can't get enough of the parent coming home from spending time overseas.
Yeah, I love those.
You know, visit them in school and embarrass the hell out of the kids, but they don't care because they love the person so much.
And the kids really love it. The kids don't know it's embarrassing in the moment.
Exactly. They'll know a few years later, but in the moment they don't. And like hair care videos.
Yeah.
It's literally all I'm watching on Instagram. And
you're nice enough. You're nice enough to send me videos of people getting into stupid accidents. Those are funny too.
Yeah. I follow an account called Kids Getting Hurt. And it is the funniest account. It's all kids. They're all fine at the end of it. Although sometimes you're like, how the hell did you just survive that? It's all kids just getting injured. And I send that. I think that's why my producer left. I would not stop sending him those videos.
These are making me uncomfortable. I don't want these anymore.
I'm working with a sociopath.
Yeah, the internet sucks, but it's also kind of fun. All right, that's Jason Rantz from The Jason Rantz Show.
You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter.
Yeah,
or
check him out.
Jason Rantz with a Z.
On all the social media platforms. But don't let your kids see any of it, because kids shouldn't be near the internet. I don't know. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. This is the last segment of the night. I have saved the best segment for the last of the night. It is my way to entice you as a listener. Stick around. The rest of the show, you got your appetizer, you got your main course, some sort of a dinner salad in there somewhere, and then you've got your dessert. And this is the dessert. It's not great news if you're a porn lover. In fact, it's bad news if you love porn and happen to live in Texas.
Sinner.
All right, listen to this. This is interesting to me. Texas House Bill 1181. It's an age verification bill in the state of Texas. And what they said was, when it passed, they said that, and the law went into effect, it requires commercial websites that publish sexually explicit or pornographic material to verify that users are over the age of 18. Does that sound super controversial to you? It's a verification law. They want to make sure that the people who are on these sites are legally allowed to be on the sites. So websites must ask government-issued identification, digital identification, transactional data from online visitors to make sure that minors are not on the site. The bill was signed into a law in June. They ask websites to do three things. One, they have to post these things in 14-point or larger font. One, pornography is potentially biologically addictive. It's proven to harm human brain development, desensitizes brain reward circuits, increases conditioned responses, and weakens brain function. Two, exposure to this content is associated with low self-esteem and body image. Those things are true. Eating disorders, impaired brain development, and other emotional and mental illnesses. 3, pornography, what's that? Pornography increases the demand for prostitution, child exploitation, and child pornography. All bad things. Pornhub, which is a big website for people in porn, has disabled access to their site in Texas as of this last week. And the reason is because they say that they object to the implementation of this new bill. This is the attorney general in Texas responding to Pornhub. He said Pornhub has now disabled its website in Texas. Sites like Pornhub are on the run because Texas has a law that aims to prevent them from showing harmful obscene material to children. We recently secured a major victory against Pornhub and other sites that sought to block this law from taking effect. In Texas, companies cannot get away with showing porn to children. If they don't want to comply, good riddance. That's the Texas Attorney General talking to these porn companies.
Sinner.
There's a lot of, I know a lot of people like porn. I get it. I understand. I understand the appeal. Don't get me wrong. I understand the appeal. But I'm also a person who thinks that it can be very, very damaging. So if this is what the people in Texas want, then good for them. That's great. If this is what they want, then good for them. All right. I hope you guys have enjoyed the show. I hope you had a wonderful time here tonight. We had a great time hanging out with you. Tune in tomorrow. We got another great show. In fact, we got a Friday show tomorrow, so it's going to be fantastic. Tune in for that. But right now, I'm tired. I got to get to sleep. Night-night.